Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Te huina o AA on air poneke. Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is Vic. I'm an alcoholic and chairperson for today's meeting. We open meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So, I will read the meeting preamble now. Which reads as such. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Right, so it is a fairly nice day in Wellington today, and this month's meeting was the As Bill Sees It, so that meets at 5:30 on Wednesdays over in, what's the name of the community centre? Te Pake Art Centre, right. So yeah, look it up online if you're in the Wellington region. And I will, at that meeting, they read the book As Bill Sees It, which is a piece of AA-approved literature. So I will open the meeting as they open the meeting, which is with a reading from that text. So let me just pull that up. There's lots of pulling things up today, so just bear with me. So the reading I chose today is Pain and Progress. Years ago, I used to commiserate with all people who suffered. Now I commiserate only with those who suffer in ignorance, who do not understand the purpose and ultimate utility of pain. Someone once remarked that pain is the touchstone of spiritual progress. How heartily we AAs can agree with him, for we know that the pains of alcoholism had to come before sobriety, and emotional turmoil before serenity. Believe more deeply, hold your face up to the light, even though for the moment you do not see. So that's from Assorted Letters from 1950 and the AA 12 and 12, pages 93 to 94. Okay, so now we'll kick off the sharing portion of the show, and I will ask Mark to share first. Oh, sorry. There's a lot of readings to read today, so I completely forgot that we also read How It Works, and I will ask Steve to read.
Thanks, Vic. I'm Steve, I'm an alcoholic, and chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing, and we stood at the turning point. we asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress, and we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Steve. And now I will ask Mark to kick off the sharing, please.
Thank you, Victoria. My name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic. I'll just quickly talk about what my drinking was like, and then my name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic. I'll just go over my drinking history just quite quickly, actually, and then I'll try and talk about sobriety. I picked up my first drink was at 16, when I was at secondary school. And I was raised in Wellington, New Zealand, and my upbringing was basically lower middle class, and I had a pretty good childhood. Everything was okay, but my parents were very nervy, neurotic people, so I grew up a bit nervy and neurotic. And when I was, when I was 16 and I had my first drink, the alcohol just took all of that away. And I was able to, when I'd had a few drinks, I was able to, I had the confidence to go up and talk to people that I normally wouldn't talk to. I thought that it made me cool and glamorous and all that, of course, but in reality it didn't. So I probably would have been better off not talking to people than having a few drinks and then going and talking to these people. But it just took away all the anxiety and all that I suffered as a kid. And I don't know, I just felt like a different person. And, you don't need to be a brain surgeon, though, to know that if you're drinking all the time, it starts to become a problem. And that's basically what happened. I went from 16 when I was probably getting drunk about once a month from there till about 18. And then from about 18 till, I suppose, about 21, it became kind of once a week. And then it just became once a day. Every day I was drinking. And my life was a mess. I couldn't, I was unemployable. I was getting, landlords and flatmates were kicking me out just for not paying rent, for stealing off them. I was just a wreck. I was just a mess. And kind of through a friend, I had a friend whose mother worked mother-in-law, I should say, worked at a treatment facility, and he suggested I try going. And he sort of said, it was down in Hamlet Springs, Queen Mary, and he said, you know, if you can go down to Queen Mary Hospital, there's a six-week program there. You go down there and, you know, it's a nice place of the country. It'd be like a little holiday for you. You can go down there and enjoy the scenery. So I from that point of view, I went. And that's really where I went to a drug and alcohol counsellor, and they assessed me and said, you're eligible to go down there. But there was going to be, I think, a 2 or 3 month wait or something like that. And he said, you should really start going to 12-step meetings. So I did, and I didn't like them. I really didn't like them. I thought, what a bunch of so-and-sos. I'm wasting my time here. But it took a while for me to accept that I was an alcoholic and that I had a drinking problem. And it took substantially more problems and issues to come along in my life before I finally accepted that and accepted that I needed help. And basically that the only place I was going to find help was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's, you know, I hit a rock bottom, probably about, I went down to the rehab, and then probably about 9 months, I left the rehab, stayed sober for about a month, and then started drinking again. And about 9 months after that, I hit a rock bottom, and I thought, well, I have to go back to AA. The AA is the only place that I know where I will get sober. And if I have to go to those meetings, then I'll go to them. And that's what I did. And that was a long time ago now, and I've been sober for many years. It was not easy at first. The first few months of sobriety for me were hell. I didn't have the crutch of alcohol anymore, so I had to kind of face myself in the clear light of day, and it wasn't very pretty. And it wasn't very nice, and I wasn't a very nice person, and I wasn't a good person, and, you know, I didn't have alcohol to mask all of that. What AA basically taught me was how to live with myself, and how to begin to build a life where I didn't feel so out of place, where I didn't feel so horrible, where I didn't feel so awful. And you know, obviously, the first part of that was not to drink, and it was hard because I was still in my early days of sobriety, I was still obsessing about drinking. You know, I didn't just go to my first AA meeting and never ever think about drinking again, or never ever want to drink. I was still wanting to drink in the early days, and I was still thinking about it a lot. So it was really hard to get through those first few months, and the first few months are definitely the hardest. And some days I was just, you know, just white knuckling it. It was some days it was just, you know, second by second, minute by minute, just hoping not to pick up a drink. And, you know, I was still thinking about it. I was still thinking, oh, maybe I should go off and have a few drinks and that. But by then I knew I had alcoholism. I knew I had a problem, and I knew that it wasn't just going to be going to a bar and having a drink. That's the thing about alcoholism for me is, number one, the number one thing is that I can't have one drink. I just can't do it. I can't go into a bar and have a beer or a glass of wine. Can't do it. I tried many a time, but I couldn't do it. So I knew in the early days, I thought, well, if I go, I might have had, I think, about 6 weeks up, for example. And I thought, oh, I'd love a drink. Just one drink would really take the edge off how I feel. But I thought, no, if I do that, it's not going to be one drink. And, you know, I already knew where it took me. So flash forward to about 6 months. I had about 6 months up. And that's when, for me, that's kind of when the edge of staying sober had been blunted. I didn't feel so horrible without a drink. I could make it through the day without a drink feeling okay. And eventually, I think probably got to about 9 months where I just wasn't really thinking about, I mean, I know that's not correct. I would still think about having a drink every now and then, but it wasn't the kind of obsession that was driving me insane. It was just kind of more of a temptation. So I could get through the day without that obsession. And when that left, it was just such a relief, you know. It was just such a relief to be able to go through a day without obsessing about alcohol, without obsessing about drinking. And, you know, and when I, you know, when I got sober, when I stopped drinking, things were okay. Life started to be okay, you know. I wasn't getting kicked out of flats, or I didn't have landlords screaming on the phone at me for not paying the rent. I wasn't having to, you know, I wasn't having to feed my alcoholism, so I wasn't having to steal off people to feed that. You know, I was slowly able to start becoming a functional member of society, and I was able to begin to look at myself in the mirror and feel okay about myself. I mean, I didn't feel great about myself, but I felt okay about myself. I went from feeling awful about myself, that I was just a piece of trash, to saying, "Oh, well, I'm okay. I'm an all right person. I'm doing my best. I'm trying to make it through the day by being an okay person." And I wasn't hurting people as much. I mean, I still, you know, even to this day, I still make mistakes. I still do things I shouldn't do. I still say things I shouldn't say. But I'm, you know, I'm a better person. And you know, it may sound cheesy if you never been to an AA meeting, but you know, it is really thanks to going to the AA meetings and working the AA program. That is what it was. That's what made all the difference. And you know, there's a lot of work involved in being a member of AA. If I want to stay sober, I'd still have to work to this day. You know, there's the 12 steps. I try to help out the meetings. I try to help newcomers to the best of my ability. There's still areas in my life where I could definitely improve in those areas, but you know, I do okay. And I'm not, you know, I don't feel ashamed of myself anymore. Like I said, I mean, I'm not perfect. There's still areas in my life I still need to improve on. But I just feel like a better person. And you know, if I hadn't got sober, I'm in my late 40s now. I may not even be alive. But if I was alive and I was still drinking, I would not be in a very nice place. I'd probably be homeless, actually. And if I go back out, it's still waiting for me, you know. I can't, you know, I've got multiple years up, but I can't go back out and have a drink today, because if I do, it's still not going to be controllable. So it's something I'm going to have to work at for the rest of my life, really. And I hope I never pick up a drink again. I'm not going to say that I will never pick up a drink again, because I don't know. But I sincerely hope that I don't. Today I don't want to. Today I really don't feel like drinking at all. It's the last thing on my mind. You know, I came in here this morning. One of the gentlemen sitting next to me picked me up and brought me in here to do the meeting. And you know, it's a nice day. And I started the day having a coffee with, you know, my friend. And this is a beautiful day. And you know, it's just, you know, that's the kind of thing that this program's brought to me. You know, I can sit there. It's a nice, beautiful day. And I'm not going to think about drinking. I'm not obsessing about drinking. I'm going to have a good day anyway. I think I've gone on long enough, so I will shut up and let someone else talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. So just a reminder, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is the Wellington AA On Air. If you or someone you know is wanting to reach out to AA in New Zealand, we do have the 0800 number, 0800 AA Works. There is a sober alcoholic at the other end of that line 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Probably the easiest way to get in touch with us and also find meetings in your area is www.alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz. Right, Jeremy, would you like to share?
Thanks, Vic. My name's Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. And I've enjoyed the sharing. I got sober in October 2001, and Prior to that, for me, drinking was my solution. It wasn't a problem for me, as far as I was concerned. It was a hell of a problem for a whole lot of other people, but it wasn't for me, because it was the thing that made me feel okay. Or it made me feel that my inadequacies and who I am, what I was, and how I felt about myself didn't matter. And it was a pretty simple formula. I feel crap about myself, I take a drink, and I don't feel so bad about myself, and that enables me to chase down all the things that make me feel better. And then I sober up, feel terrible about myself again because of what I've done, and rinse and repeat, and I did that for the best part of 20 years. And progressively getting worse. And my drinking was a bit like the proverbial tornado through other people's lives. I managed to drink myself into hospital a couple of times. The second time I got told that if I did it again, I wouldn't be walking out. That didn't slow me down for a nanosecond. The only thing that was consistent with all of my relationships is that I wasn't faithful in any of them. And I was incapable of being a good person to anyone, you know, being somebody that you could rely on and trust. I felt so terrible about myself that the only way I could cope with myself was drinking. I felt that you all had an idea of how to operate in this world, and that I didn't, and that when you found out, you'd realise how incredibly defective I was, and there was going to be a consequence for that, and it was going to be bad. I had no concept of what that was going to be, but I just knew it was going to be bad. And but drinking took all of that away. So as far as I was concerned, it was me who was the defective problem, but alcohol was actually a solution, and it wasn't a problem. I found out after I stopped drinking that my then wife had begged my friends not to let me drink, that the number of times people asked me not to drink, and I'd always find a way around that. And if on the very rare occasion I was able not to pick up a drink that night, boy, did you owe me. It consumed my life, but in a way that I couldn't see. The last night I was drinking, I was up to no good again, and I was driving home drunk in the morning, which was not an uncommon experience. And I rang my then wife and said to her, that I've been out with a mate drinking, which was, again, not a particularly uncommon story. And the guy I was with, he said, that's the lamest thing I've ever heard. I cannot believe you got away with that. You're a effing legend. And normally when the word legend drops, you sort of feel quite good about yourself. Not this time for me. This time, as soon as he said the word legend, it was like the credits from Star Wars rolling out in front of me, the reality of who and what I was. And I was an insipid, manipulative, pathetic, not very nice man. I was the man that I never wanted to be. And I knew that at depth, that I did not want to be this man. And at that point in time, I was given a choice. I could change or I could carry on as I was. And I chose change. Now, when I chose change, I had no intention of giving up drinking. I did not think alcohol was the problem. But something took over what happened next. And I dropped my mate off and then got honest with my then wife and immediately had nowhere to live. And went to my parents, who were lovely people. There's nothing wrong with them. I had a story about how hard done by I was. It was all rubbish. They said, you can't stay here unless you do something about your drinking. And I said, there's nothing wrong with my drinking. I've got deep problems. I get that. I accept that. I need a lot of serious psychological help, but drinking's not the problem. They, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on one's perspective, didn't accept that. So I threw a tantrum. But they held the line, and so I said, okay, fine, I'll go to AA. I had no idea what AA was about. I had no intention of stopping drinking. I just knew it had something to do with stopping drinking and from the television shows. And so I picked up the phone, went to my first meeting, and when I walked in the room, I saw it was a dry dock meeting, so I saw God on the wall, and I heard the prayers, and I thought, jeepers, I've walked into a bunch of happy clappers. And that didn't actually worry me terribly much, because I was there ticking a box to get a roof over my head for the night. And the guy I'd rung, he was somewhat surprised I showed up, and he placed me in the front of the room so I couldn't run away. And I halfway through that meeting, I learned that I was an alcoholic, that that was the problem. And when I learned that, the world suddenly went from being out of focus to being in focus for those people who are young or old enough to remember rabbit ears and ghosted television pictures. It was like the television picture getting suddenly into focus, and I just knew what was wrong with me. And at that moment in time, the desire to drink was taken from me. And I realized that that was a gift, but it was also, it had its price. It was a gift because if I hadn't had that experience, I don't think anything would have stopped me continuing to drink. But because alcoholism is about self and self-obsession and self-centeredness, which I was exhibiting at full noise, myself came back, and I thought it was just enough to stop drinking and then I'd be fine, and as long as I didn't drink, everything was going to be all right. And so did everyone else in my life, because they forgave me for my drinking and behaviour, because they thought, oh, it's just the booze. The booze is gone, therefore everything's going to be fine. So I immediately thrust myself back into work, tried to rebuild my business, tried to recover some of the financial harm. I got my health back, got relationships back, but I wasn't treating my alcoholism and I wasn't drinking. So I was a dry drunk. And that is, I destroyed every relationship I had recovered and everything that I got back. I was a petulant child on speed, and I was left with nowhere to go again. And I came back to AA, and I haven't left. And since then, I've had a lot of pain in life. I've also had a lot of success in life. I have, on any measure now, a life that is beyond the proverbial wildest dreams. I still suffer from two diseases. I suffer from diabetes and I suffer from alcoholism, and I have to treat them on a daily basis. My alcoholism is as alive and well as it was when I first came in. It's changed. It's adjusted to my sobriety, but it's like the proverbial thing doing push-ups in the parking lot waiting for me. And I woke up this morning and it was waiting for me at the end of the bed, and it had a lovely conversation with me about how hard done by I was. And thankfully I'm here at a meeting and I've been talking to other alcoholics, and my headspace has changed, because that is the benefit of one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And I know that I will need that today, and I will probably need it tomorrow, and I've needed it for most of my life. I've had a nervous breakdown in sobriety and recovered from that, but it's with a lot of therapy. But my underlying problem is alcoholism, and if for any therapy or any help to work in my life, I have to look after my alcoholism. I have to deal with it. I've had great miracles in recovery. I was dumped horribly and had a nervous breakdown from that, and I desperately wanted the emotional pain to end, and drinking has had a unique capacity to do that. But my higher power at the time said to me, yep, you'll get the numbness, but when you'll have to sober up, and it'll be exponentially worse when you do. And the idea that the pain could be worse than I was feeling took drinking away as a solution to pain. It's still something that sings to me when I think I'm wonderful. And occasionally a bottle will have that song that I think only alcoholics know. But I'm aware that I don't want what I had when I came here. And what I do want is the reprieve from my head and alcoholism that I get from working an AA program. And to do that, I have to sponsor and be sponsored. I have to go to meetings, which most of the time I end up enjoying. I have most of my friends are in AA now, but I have friends outside of AA. Some of those were friendships that I had when I was drinking. Not one of them thinks it was a bad idea for me to stop drinking. So I'm very grateful to AA, and I know I have to keep working it to retain the sobriety I have today. And that's not a curse. The alternative is a curse. The alternative is what I had when I got here. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeremy. You're listening to Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM, and this is the AA meeting on air, Wellington. Once again, if you or someone you know wants to get in contact with AA in New Zealand, you can do that by calling 0800 AA Works 24/7, or there's the www.alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz website. If you are enjoying this broadcast and want to listen to more like it, you can find it on the Wellington Access Radio website. If you go to Wellington Access Radio under shows, you can find AA on air. And it's got all of the recordings from the last few months as well. Okay, so now I will ask Steve to share, please.
Thanks, Vic. Hello, everybody. My name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic. And I've enjoyed the sharing this morning. And, you know, when I come to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I hear my story and I hear people talk about themselves, and it's just like listening to myself. My story and experience with alcohol is I started drinking in my very early teens. I'm originally from Auckland, West Auckland, so drinking was part of our culture. And I would hang out with my cousins and we would go and drink and do house parties and all that kind of stuff. And it was just a normal thing to do. You know, we carried around in cars and had a great time and I had a lot of fun with it. It was great. And as I got older, that behaviour stayed. You know, it was very much weekend drinking. We'd start on a Friday and party all weekend, and then, you know, I'd clean myself up and go to school on Monday. And, you know, at some stage I started drinking at school at lunchtime, and it was to get me through the afternoon. And, you know, I don't know why, but I just did it. And it made me feel good. It made me feel relaxed and accepted and part of life and all that kind of stuff, and I didn't see anything wrong with it at that stage. And as time went on, the party rolled on as well, and, you know, the weekends got bigger, and the weekends started stretching out to, you know, Friday, and then I was working and I was earning reasonably good money, and, you know, it just was just like gathered speed, really. And there were no brakes on it, you know, and I didn't want to put any brakes on it. It was just a big party, and I was in boots and all. And, you know, as time went on, I ended up with a really good job, actually. I don't know how I did it, but I, you know, ended up with this really good job in my 20s. And something changed. You know, I became really egotistical, and I performed really well at this job, and I was ended up earning really good money, and so the parties got bigger and wilder and longer, and the weekends would start on a Wednesday and finish on a Sunday, and it just kept getting bigger, and it just snowballed in a way that it was out of control, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it to bits, and I kind of lost myself in it completely, and I ended up this completely egotistical and self-centered, and everything was about me, and I had to have my own way, and I had to win, and I had to be on top, and all that kind of stuff. It was just, you know, it was pretty brutal, to be honest, and I lost myself completely in it, and, you know, my drinking overtook all that. My drinking completely cleaned me up, and I got to the point where I knew I was going to lose my job, and I couldn't imagine life without working. So my solution was to put some control around my drinking, you know, which seemed quite practical to me. You know, it was like I'll control how much I drink, and I won't, you know, I won't drink on a Wednesday, or I'll only drink on a Thursday, Friday, or I'll only drink on the weekend. So I moved into a sort of mode of absolute control of my drinking. And, you know, I failed miserably, because what would happen, and this is my experience with alcohol, is that every time I drank, I'd drink and it would go down and it would explode in the bottom of my stomach, and I'd get this euphoria that would run through my body, and that was the physical reaction to it. And then immediately after that, my mind would go more. And that's how I behaved with alcohol. It was this physical boom and this obsession of more. And I had no control over either. Now, I didn't have an off switch. So in the more, I would drink and just keep drinking. Now, a lot of the times my intention was just to have a few drinks or just to drink and have a party and have a good time. But, you know, the reality of my drinking was that I would drink and it would just be completely out of control. I was a blackout drinker, so I didn't really remember what was going on. So on the outside, I was full of bravado and thinking I was fantastic. And on the inside, I was appalled. You know, people would tell me the next day what I'd get up to, and I would cringe on the inside and go, that's not me at all. You know, as a sober person, I don't do that kind of stuff, and I don't say that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was just all a bit of a mess, really. But I thought I could control the behaviour. I thought I could control the booze. I thought I could control everything. And my life became really locked down. It was just torture. It was horrible. And I remember trying to sit at home on a Friday night one night, not wanting to go out to drink because I knew what I'd get up to. And I remember sitting there trying to watch TV on a Friday night, and I think I lasted about half an hour. I just couldn't do it. You know, I had to be up and out and doing something, and I couldn't sit in my own company. And, you know, I learnt more about that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Long story short, I ended up here, and I didn't ask for help. I didn't reach out for help. I was talking to somebody at work one day, and something came up about drinking, and I blurted out, I'm trying not to drink, or I'm trying to control my drinking, something like that. And he said, yeah, so I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous, what are you doing? And I went, oh, I'm just trying to control it. and he said, how's that going for you? And I went, well, it's tough. And, you know, and then he invited me to come along to a meeting, and that's how I ended up here. You know, I was 27, and that was in 1989, and so I've been here a while. And, you know, I came to AA and I sat there and I felt incredibly self-conscious. My head was going run for the door. And I was listening to some of the stories, but I kind of was really awful. I felt like I was in the right place, but my head was going run for the door. But I stayed. And, you know, in my first year in AA, I drank regularly. I drank every few months, sometimes every couple of weeks. And, you know, I think at that stage, there was something at Alcoholics Anonymous because the people talked my language. They talked about me. They talked about my behaviour. They talked how I felt. They talked about the experiences I had when I was drinking. So there was a kinship with these people, you know, from a party and drinking perspective. And I think I stayed on that, you know. But I couldn't imagine life without drinking. Just not drinking was not part of my – I just couldn't do it. And they said to me, keep coming back, Steve. Even if you're drinking, still keep coming back. Because, you know, later on they said to me, we knew that if you were in here drinking, you had half a chance. And if you were out there drinking, you had no chance at all. And I never saw myself as the no chance at all guy. I always saw myself as the, you know, chance guy. And so they saw right through me. And, you know, I sat around here. And eventually what happened, the wonderful people in AA, they were so caring and so thoughtful and so wanting for me to get sober because they could just see how desperate I was, and they could see how the chaotic mind and the chaotic life I was living. And in the reading it talked about, you know, emotional trauma and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was just sitting with all that. And, you know, they couldn't stop me from drinking. You know, AA can't stop me from drinking. That was a God job, and that happened. My drinking left me, and then I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I found here is that I found a way to live with my alcoholism, with other people who are trying to do the same thing. You know, they share their stories, they share their experience, they share their heartaches, their joys, their sorrows, all these kind of things, and it connected me to life. You know, it connected me to living. And through that, I've been able to build my own life. You know, I'm no longer the scattered person, with no deep friends and just, you know, rolling through people's lives like a freight train, really. You know, I'm a little bit more connected to life now. And what I found here is that I'm not doing it alone. And when I was drinking, I felt very alone in the world, even though nobody would think so. I was, you know, loud and proud kind of thing, but I was very alone inside and lost, and I'm no longer like that. You know, I've been able to build a good life and get by without drinking, and you know, it hasn't come without its challenges, but I've been able to face them all without having to drink to cope. And one day I was talking to somebody who helped me in my drinking, in my sobriety, and he said to me one Saturday morning, I was sitting there whining on about how bad life was, and you know, he said, well, if you want what we've got, do what we do, and what we do is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my problem was that I wanted what everybody had here, but I didn't want to do what you guys did. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. And the thought of doing steps with everything in it was just, you know, not for me. But, you know, out of desperation, I gave it a try, and I was surprised at the relief I got from it, the relief for myself and my crazy head. So, you know, I've been able to build a good life. He said to me this day, he said to me, you know, if the only thing I can guarantee in Alcoholics Anonymous is that if you front up every day with an honest attempt at this program, you'll be able to take your life out in the world and not have to drink to cope. And at the end of the day, that's all I wanted. I just wanted to get about my life and not have to drink to cope. And that's what I found here at Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'll leave it there. Thanks, Vic.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. We're broadcasting on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this has been the Wellington AA on Air. Once again, if you or someone you know is in New Zealand and would like to get in touch with us, there is the 0800 AA Works number with a sober alcoholic on the other end of the line, 24/7, 365. And if you would like to find out more about AA, if you would like to find a meeting in your area, there's a really good function on the website where you can just put in your region and it all shows up on a map. So that's www.alcoholicsanonymous.nz. To hear more of this show, it is on the AA website, but I think the best place to go is actually the Wellington Access Radio website. So you can just find that at Wellington Access Radio online as well. So today has been the As Bill Sees It meeting. Once again, that is 5:30 on Wednesdays over on, what street is it on? It's in Wellington, so just it's best to just look on the website if you're interested, just with all the other meetings that are available on the website in Wellington. There are many, many to choose from. So we will... the sharing portion of the show is over, so I will invite everyone to please help me close the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.